Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, though, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give our discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit more about what's made them who they are today. I'm delighted to be joined today by Fractional CMO, Neil Schaefer. Neil, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Dave. I'm generally as excited as you are.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. We're going to have a good chat then. So for the benefit of our listeners, Neil, where do we find you today?
I am in the wonderful city of Irvine in the county that we call Orange County, about 15 minutes away from Disneyland in Southern California.
And also, if I can add one level of detail, I think I'm looking at a home office. So would that be fair? In your role, you kind of, I imagine, do a lot of working from home.
Yeah, well, you know, my fractional CMO started working with local companies here in Orange County where I would go to their office a few hours a week. That's really what started this business model. As you can imagine, with COVID and publishing this book called The Age of Influence, right as we went on lockdown, just wonderful timing, but it led to a lot of inquiries and a lot more companies willing to remote work. Because that's what they were doing with their employees. So I work with a variety of companies as a fractional CMO. And some of my clients are in Japan, some are in Dubai, some are in the US, and then some are locally that I meet in person. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of work that I do in my home office.
I think you've partly hinted at it in your answer there, but can you tell us, what does a fractional CMO do?
Sure. So the idea of a fractional CMO is, a company has the need for marketing leadership, but they don't have that person. Or maybe they are a startup where they don't have a lot of in-house marketing expertise. Or maybe they have a marketing department, but they're very junior and they're not as savvy as the CEO would like them to be. So there's a few different, or maybe they have a special project, like they want to initiate an influencer marketing program, an employee advocacy program, a social selling program, where they really want to bring in outside help to start spark that. So fractional CMO is sort of this overall coverage term, which means I can be as senior as I need to be, or I can be as practical as I need to be. But the idea with the level of CMO or with that naming is that I am like an employee. So before that, normal marketing consultants, it's project-based. It's like, oh, tell me about your project. These would be the deliverables. This is the cost. And it becomes sort of a black box for the company. What I found, and it really started with a local company here requesting me to do this, of working side by side and basically saying, you are in charge of my hours. You're paying me for X hours per month, like on a retainer contract, but treat me like an employee. If you want me to train your employees, I'm up to doing that. If we want to work on strategy, create new reports, decide on tools. If you want me to do content writing, whatever it is. So it's very flexible. It allows my clients to retain the IP of working together with me. And they find it very refreshing in this world to be able to work with an expert as if they are an employee. So I really enjoy doing it because I like, you know, variety is the spice of life. I like working with a variety of companies in a variety of industries. I am limited by obviously by hours, so I can only do so many companies at a time. But I always have a portfolio of a few companies that I work with. And I really, really enjoy it. And I've mentioned this to other marketing consultants and they're like, yeah, I want to do that too. And I see more and more people talk about this fractional CMO sort of title, but there's still a lot of questions about it, but hopefully that clarifies exactly what it is.
That really does help. And you've also given some illustrations of kind of practically day to day, what that means that you do. And so that's a pretty wide range of things. So I'm curious, what are the things that you enjoy in that list?
Yeah, you know, I could actually, it's funny, if I was to go through this, well, I was going to read you what I sent out to my newsletter list today, but, you know, for one client, it is, they want to get Gen Z overseas interested in traditional Japanese crafts using Instagram and TikTok. For another client, they are in the shipping industry trying to build thought leadership with a podcast over LinkedIn, but also employee advocacy. For another company, it's really, they're already pretty, they're e-commerce here in the United States. They're already pretty savvy, but it's all about how do we get more ROI out of everything that they're doing, and how do we optimize everything? So it's really very, very different for every client. And I enjoy the variety. It's funny because in my newsletter, what I was going to read you was everyone says you need to niche down. But I believe that if you're a CMO, you need to have as broad and deep of knowledge of everything in marketing as possible. And that's what I achieve to do. So I prefer to be a generalist. I like to think of myself as the marketing doctor. When you have a marketing illness, I need to be able to prescribe anything, not just the social media that I like or the SEO that I've been trained on. You really need to be able to cover everything and have this holistic perspective. And the only way to have the holistic perspective is to get deep into many different facets of, in my case, digital content influencer, social media marketing. So yeah, I really enjoy doing it. I consider myself an educator at heart. I teach at universities as well. And so working with clients is the ability to do that at a deeper level and to generate results, which I also love to do. So there you have it.
So the answer is actually, you just love the whole end-to-end piece. And actually,
I do.
Variety for you is the spice of life.
Yeah. And you know, my background, I'm glad this is a B2B podcast because my background's actually B2B sales before marketing. Yeah. Yeah. And so I love it because I love the results, right? It's results oriented. You actually see numbers. You actually have KPIs from your work, which are sales, obviously, and then the bonus that comes with it. Mm. So I love being able to generate that and, you know, help really contribute to society by leveraging my IP and experience and helping a company grow, seeing those numbers.
I think it's great. And you hint there too at a little bit of at your journey. So maybe you could perhaps unpack that a little bit for us. What are the, if you look back on your career to date, what were the key steps in your journey to getting to the place where you kind of felt equipped to quite confidently be a generalist? Because that's difficult, right? You've got to be able to carry a breadth of expertise across such a range of topics.
Right. Well, I mean, I could go back in my career and there's a lot of curveballs, as we say in America, because of baseball. I guess a lot of curved free kicks, you would say, in the football world there in England. But yeah, I mean, I have a, like, you know, maybe some of you have children in high school or, you know, college, and people change, right? So don't freak out, because I was originally an art history major and I was interning at museums, believe it or not, during my college years. But fast forward to when I started all of this, from B2B sales, the transition was really back in 2008, a bad economy. Company hired me to do what I was doing, which was high technology sales and business development in Asia. And 3.5 months later, they decided to pull the plug on their overseas sales, I should say. And that that required me, at the time, I didn't think I was reinventing myself, but I was in charge of Asia sales yet represented in the United States, and that is only gonna last so long. So it really was a need to reinvent because I had lived in Asia 15 years and now I was back in the US. But fast forward to, I had started a blog about LinkedIn, and I had started to become a very heavy user of LinkedIn back in 2008,
right?
Because I didn't have a local network, because my network was in Asia and I was looking for a job here in the United States. So that's really where I started. And I went really deep. And I think because of my sales background, I saw LinkedIn as this business tool where others were still like, oh, I only want to connect with people that I've met in real life. And you know, back in those days, Dave, you'd be surprised. But, you know, if I had social media marketing in my title and I had the most connections, I would appear first in the search results. In other words, the search results for people searching LinkedIn were in descending order of number of connections. So it was very different than it is today, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But what got me started was doing that. My wife saying, hey, if you don't find a job, maybe you should write a book. So I converted that blog into a book about LinkedIn in 2009. I started getting opportunities to speak, and I said, hey, if I'm speaking, will you buy copies of my books? It's going to help the audience. And then from all the speaking, I had all these businesses come up to me in January of 2010 wanting help. They didn't know what they didn't know. They didn't know what help they needed. I didn't have an agency background. So to me, strategy and education seemed to be the right way to do it. So I started really LinkedIn only, but actually halfway through writing a LinkedIn book, I started getting deeper into Twitter and into Facebook. This is 2009. Twitter was still the thing back then. And Facebook was opening up. And I realized that as the clients were coming to me, I couldn't dictate only you have to be on LinkedIn because it's not realistic. And so I realized that I needed to, instead of just focusing solely on LinkedIn, I need to focus on any platform a client might need in order to be able to give them the best advice. So that's really what started that journey, Dave. I'd say that having my own brand and experimenting with my own brand is always where I start to understand, you know, like TikTok or when new social networks emerge. But also when I have a client that needs that help as well, it's doing a lot of R&D. On you know, but I would also say that working with clients helps me better understand new technologies when they're in need of it as well, right? It provides an impetus for me to spend a little bit more time, you know, burning some midnight oil on the weeknights, learning what have you. If you have the right mindset and you have a personal brand or maybe a nonprofit that you can sort of experiment with of new technologies and new strategies and new networks, I think anybody can really do it. And I recommend you do, because once you are able to do that, when you see something new come along, like Google's new helpful content update or the emergence of TikTok, or I've had a lot of clients want me to talk to them about employer branding. And I've been talking about employee advocacy since 2012 and social selling as well. So when you have that broad experience, you're able to connect the dots, like Steve Jobs says, you look back at your past. And I think the impact you can provide to companies is even greater. So a lot of people say niche down. I think there's tremendous value in being a generalist, but you got to have the right mindset. And as the great Kobe Bryant said, you got to put in the reps. You got to do a lot of work. It's like a role-playing game. You got to play a lot to get that experience level up. And every day I'm continuing to try to get that experience level up. It never ends, but I enjoy that. I'm a Kaizen type of guy. I lived in Japan 15 years. I worked at a Japanese company. I have that Japanese work ethic, so I'm good with it. And if you're good with it, I encourage you to do the same.
That's great advice. And so you're in quite a privileged position, Neo, in terms of your job, because you're actually getting to hear what lots of different organizations are looking for from their marketing. So I wondered whether you could kind of highlight for us, you know, what's the latest. You know, what are the trends that you're seeing that people, particularly in the business marketing space, are asking for right now?
Well, I think B2B, we still have this whole employee advocacy / social selling / employer branding. And even today, I'll be speaking next month in Chicago to a B2B company about this. But they've sort of moved on from formal programs to more of, how do we get our employees more active on social? So instead of importing an employee advocacy tool and saying, use this tool and share our content, they're taking the other approach to say, we really want to train and encourage these employees to be themselves in social media and to create better content and to show up in more places because it's going to help them. So this is definitely a trend I've seen this year. And I've had a few requests to do this for various B2B companies. So I know that that's when I know it's a trend, when I see it happen multiple times. I think it's also the realization that as we progress, the prospective buyers are not just on LinkedIn. So diversification of social networks, beginning with Instagram, but even I'd say going as far as TikTok. And we know, just looking back at history, taking Facebook for an example, and even Instagram, over time, social networks age and older people adopt those platforms. And the same thing is starting to happen with TikTok. It'll take time, but definitely, you know, I think B2B for Instagram is still relatively new and still very hard to do. I think TikTok is even more challenging, but I would definitely obviously start with that Instagram piece. I think also new mediums like podcasting is something that I hear a lot of. You know, there's some data that suggests that there's a lot of B2B listeners of podcasts, such as this podcast. Yep. So I see a lot of companies wanting to create branded podcasts as sort of another trend. I think these are some of the leading trends. I think, you know, what's old is new with COVID and the whole acceleration of the digital transformation. Companies are realizing, wow, we had an SEO strategy 10 years ago that doesn't work for today's search engines. Wow, we're doing email marketing, but we are not really doing really savvy marketing automation. Probably most B2B companies are, but there's still some that can use some tweaks there. So it's also going back into those pieces and remembering that, you know, we need to be everywhere. It's search, social, email. We have to have all of our bases covered. And there, you know, it may be time to relook at that strategy and see what we're doing. So I'd say it's a combination of those things. I don't think there's anything extremely new. It's always an evolution, not a revolution, I like to say. But yeah, it's always a fight for those leads, for those conversions, and to keep in better touch with customers. And that may be another piece that's more in demand these days, is how do we better keep in touch with customers, the customer experience? How do we retain them? How do we celebrate them? Is something, obviously, that, you know, customer experience, just mainly B2C, but also B2B, is something that we obviously talk a lot about these days as well. So that gives you a few little pieces of what
No, that's great. And then to pick up on the last one, how do you see that customer experience trend changing over the course of the next 5 or 10 years? Is it only going to become higher on the business agenda?
I think it will become higher, because as millennials age, they're already the majority of the workforce here. As they become more and more of them become decision makers, we know that that generation specifically, and even more so with Gen Z, they want to buy from brands that they feel they share the same values with. And I think it's even more so with brands that they work with as well. So I think, you know, values-based marketing, when social movements like Black Lives Matter happen, are you going to take a stand? We've seen B2B companies, you know, supporting LGBTQ communities with like rainbow icons on LinkedIn. I think we're going to see more of that. And I think that companies are going to try to close this gap with relationships with customers. I think we're going to see a lot more community building of customers. And I'm a big fan. I wrote about this in the Age of Influence, of really tapping into your customers and treating them as influencers. I bring up Evernote as an example of a company. They're quasi B2B, they're B2B to C. But their blog is all about their customers and all about how their customers get productivity from using their product, right? And it's a great example of bringing your customers into your marketing, and which also helps deepen that relationship. So I'd say that trend is only going to continue for those reasons. And, you know, I think it begins for those listening, if this is something you want to get involved with, because customer experience, it's not necessarily a marketing function, but it often falls into marketing.
Yeah.
Is really just start with a customer experience audit, right? What does a customer go through when they engage with you? What are the different touch points? What are the messages that you're sending them without your knowing? And I think that's a really great way to start and find these gaps in that customer experience that most companies still have.
And you've mentioned a couple of times in our chat about your book, The Age of Influence. I wonder maybe you could tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. So this is a book about influencer marketing that I wrote in March of 2020. And it really came about, you know, it's the fourth book I've written. And I only write when I believe there is a need for the content, right? So back in 2018, 2019, it was really a class. I was a guest lecturer at USC, an MBA class on social media marketing. And normally the types of questions I get asked were about social media strategy, social media ROI, marketing technology. This was the first time that I got asked not just about influencer marketing, but these marketers in the room were also asking how they too could become influencers. And when I did a little bit more research and connecting the dots of my past, I realized that, you know, affiliate marketing or asking influencers to be on your podcast or inviting them to speak at your event or even employee advocacy, we were tapping into the influence that each of your employees have. That this notion of influencer marketing has always been around. The emergence of Instagram and the budgets that went to people with lots of followers only sort of accelerated this. But I believe that this concept of leveraging others to help spread the word about your company, to incite word of mouth, whether it's B2C, B2B, nonprofit, government organization, is a concept that was deeply misunderstood just because when people think of the word influencer, they, and I quote, cringe, is feedback that I get from a lot of marketers who are not invested. But as I did my research and I connected the dots, I did a lot of thinking and developing content. I realized that of all the different things you can do in digital content influencer social media marketing, this was the most untapped area that I thought most companies were just not taking advantage of, but that could be extremely impactful, not just for inciting word of mouth, but for the content that can be created as part of that. And a natural component of that content is it's probably going to be good content. Yeah. And that content also has the chance to be naturally, organically amplified as well. So that's what I set out to do in the book, to really, I believe that marketers have gotten duped when it comes to when it comes to understanding influencer marketing. The conversation was controlled by either anti-influencer bloggers or influencer marketing agencies and tools that just talked about numbers of followers. You need to pay more if they have more followers. And there was, you know, vanity metrics have no meaning, especially in B2B. Mm-hmm. So that's what I set out to do, is set the record straight and to re-educate, for lack of a better word, everybody on truly what influencer marketing is. It's not, it's a concept, you know, celebrity endorsements, what have you. It's a concept that's been around for literally centuries. And, you know, today it can be a very, very powerful and impactful way. In fact, I sort of challenge my clients that are especially in B2C of replacing your own social media organic content with 100% user-generated content, ideally influencer-generated content. And that's a challenge that I give to all of my clients, to have that mindset. So yeah, I believe it's the first book that really re-educates, but also creates a very, very strategic blueprint for what any marketer reading the book can do to either get started or to optimize what they're doing. And I will say, in B2B influencer marketing, I had this conversation with Jay Baer on his podcast, and we both agreed, you know, for B2C, anybody can make the decision. For B2B, it's a group of people that make the buying decision. And the amount of content about a B2C product like cosmetics versus a B2B product like artificial intelligence software for human resources, there's not that many content creators talking about that, right?
Yeah.
So the impact of influencers and the value of influencer marketing for B2B, we both agreed, is even more important than for B2C, even though it's less intuitive for B2B marketers.
Mm, absolutely. And I think that in B2B, really, we're only on the beginnings of that journey. I think the next decade is your age of influence, really, for B2B, right?
Absolutely. And you know, I know by the accent, in the UK, you have a great company there called Analytica.
Yeah.
And they are, I would say, at the forefront of B2B influencer marketing from a technology perspective. I think right before this podcast goes live, they're actually going to have their first B2B influencer marketing conference in London. I'm hoping to fly over for it. If I do, I'd love to see you there, Dave.
It
definitely is something that more and more companies are, they're seeing through sort of the noise in the blogosphere and really seeing that it can have great, you know, positive impact on the business. And more and more B2B companies are definitely taking it seriously. I have a client, they're in the machine tools industry, and they are actually sponsoring a YouTuber who talks about machine tools. They also sponsor a podcast, which talks about machine tools. So, and that, I think, it just says it all. I mean, if that's sort of a niche industry, that type of a product, if they're, you know, engaging with YouTubers and sponsoring podcasts, that is, you know, that is sort of where I see smart companies, innovative companies moving in the future.
That's really great. Neil, if people want to find out more about you and about the Age of Influence, what should they do?
Well, The Age of Influence is available at any fine bookseller, including those in the United Kingdom. So you should be able to find it. My name is Neil Schaefer. There's a few Schaefers out there in social media. So I am the real Neil. That's NEALSCHAFFER. I'm on social media, Neil Schaefer. My website's neilschaefer.com. And if you're interested in what I talk about, I also have my own podcast called Your Digital Marketing Coach with Neil Schaefer. So I'm pretty discoverable, I'd like to think.
So please do discover Neil. And Neil, thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you, my friend. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Neil Schaefer. And thanks to our technical man from Through the Eye, Andrew Gratian. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can. And email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.